This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few.
Hello, and welcome to Tag Teams Back Again.
Whoop, there it is. You know, Brother Kelly, I love you.
I love you too, Brother Marty. Yeah, Kelly Nelson here, joined as always by Marty Sleaze. And yes, today love comes to Tag Teams Back Again in the form of brother love. Not as a wrestler, but he will be involved in one of the matches that we look at, and his involvement is actually very entertaining. Yeah, what else do we have? Well, it's a fine fall day here in 2016, and we're looking at...
That's not true in Boston.
No?
Yeah. It was raining really hard today.
Yeah, it was raining pretty hard here in Vancouver this morning, but it cleared off and it actually turned out pretty nice.
Though apparently we're in a drought here in New England, so I guess we needed it.
Oh, yeah? Well...
Yeah, that's what I've been told, is that we're in a drought, but I don't know. I guess so.
Well, there's no shortage of rain out here in the Pacific Northwest, that's for sure.
Yeah, it never is, right? The Pacific Northwest ends up in a drought, then we got some serious problems.
Yeah, no, that's one thing we won't have to worry about is lack of rain and lack of sunshine at this time of year. But we're going to bring some sunshine into your lives. I'm going to put smiles on your faces as we always do. This is such a serious time now. You know, people are taking sides. People are on the right. People are on the left. People are yelling.
Oh, yeah.
Screaming.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
And if only Brother Love had ran. Oh, that would be great. Yeah. Brother Love in Donald Trump's cabinet. I love you. That would really drive the people on the left nuts.
But yeah, it's been a week full.
Did you hear Linda McMahon is going to be Secretary of Commerce?
Yeah, that's a rumor. Anyway.
Oh man, I hope so.
Yeah, well, why not get
why
her in
not? Let's go all in on this.
Yeah, you may as well. I mean, we can have a build to a WrestleMania where Trump puts his presidency on the line or something like that.
That's what I'm thinking, against Vince.
Yes, there you
go. What insane would that be?
Yeah, we can only dream. But
if he actually determined the president via a steel cage match at WrestleMania, that's it. Vince McMahon can die a happy man. He's done it all.
Truly he has. So enough of the whole serious political talk from this week. It's time to bring some entertainment, bring some wrestling back into your lives, some talk about 1988 WWF tag team wrestling, as we always do. And being the fall of 2016, we're going back 28 years to the fall of 1988, coincidentally also an election year in the States that year, and also a year that a Republican won the presidency.
Yeah, but I don't think it probably was not as contentious, I would say.
No, God, no. God, no.
Probably was not.
It was a pretty tame election, from what I can recall, as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, yeah. I guess it was.
I'd say that is, yeah, it was probably one of the tamer ones.
Yeah. So we are in September now, just past SummerSlam, and we're looking at the Rockers in action, a team that just debuted a few months prior. And, of course, Marty and I love them. They were our number one tag team of all time on a show we did a while back. And, you know, going forward, I'm very excited to see a lot of Rockers matches. And a lot of them I've already seen, but a lot I haven't. And the one we're looking at now from September 29th from the Mecca, Madison Square Garden, it's the Rockers versus the Conquistadors, who we've looked at once before. A team dear to my heart because they're a mass team. I love the old school American mass teams or mass wrestlers in general. And I had seen this match before, and it's quite a doozy. Marty, what did you make of it?
I have not seen it before, and they are technically luchadors.
I guess so, yeah. From somewhere.
They're from somewhere in Latin America.
Yeah, in Latin America, right.
We don't know where in Latin America. Superstar Billy Graham gets a little, you know, starts throwing out some Latin American countries. But what's lost in all this is we don't know where the Rockers are from. Did you notice that?
Were they from parts unknown?
I guess when you rock as hard as the Rockers do, you don't have a home. Your home is the tour bus, right?
That's a good point. Like,
I mean, Sean's clearly from Texas, and where's Marty Jannetty from? Georgia?
Yes. I believe that's where he's from.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so it starts off. This match is a match that starts off really good, and then they go. It probably goes too long. Is probably what my issue is. But the beginning sequence was really cool. So the Conquistadors got the torture rack on Sean, like right from the beginning, and they move Sean from, or sorry, it's not Sean, Marty. They got Marty in the torture rack, and they move Marty from shoulder to shoulder. Now the announcers are completely, you know, confused and perplexed what this move even is doing. Like, what's his face? Ron Trongard's confused why is this, they're not airplane spinning the man. And it's just like, you're an idiot. But anyways.
Well, I made a note here. Do you think that them using the torture rack was like a subtle sort of shot at Crockett and Lex Luger saying, like, your great finishing maneuver is being used by jobbers, basically, in the WWF?
Being used by jobbers, by heel jobbers that are not going to win the match.
Yeah. Because nobody, awesome. I mean, Hercules used the torture rack, so.
I guess it's definitely a move that I think could make a comeback that would be decent.
Right.
You know, it would, as long as it, I think the thing with submission moves nowadays is that people are just in them for too long. Like, it should be like three wrenches max of the torture rack tap out. Right. It should be like a quick thing, I think. And I think you can get it over.
I always thought it was a cool-looking move. I still do to this day.
Oh, I still do. I mean, I'm a Luger mark. I grew up with Luger as, you know, the babyface hero. But, you know, I think it's legitimately a very cool move. It's a very powerful-looking move.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, but what's cool about it is so they're passing the person back and forth, Marty. And so Sean eventually gets tired of all this. Dex one Conquistador, grabs Marty, puts him on his shoulders, and then puts Marty back on his corner and then goes to town on the other Conquistador. So I thought it was really cool, you know, fun way to open up the match. Like, really different. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I don't like innovation too much, but that was good innovation. And it, plus, it was in 1988. So I don't understand why the kids nowadays – I noticed this. So I was listening – this was a long time ago now, a couple months ago. But I was listening to Enzo Amore on Stone Cold's podcast, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the realization that me and Enzo are the same age or close to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, God. I was like, oof. man, my generation is finally shaping what pro wrestling is like. And he was like, New Age Outlaws and all this stuff. And I was like, damn it, we have a problem, folks. Like, you know, I just watched a New Age Outlaws match that was pretty decent. But I don't think he was watching the New Age Outlaws for the reasons I was watching the New Age Outlaws. I could be. And the thing is, like, why not go back, watch a random Conquistadors Rockers match and be like, damn, this is pretty cool. There's five people on Earth that have seen this match. So nobody's going to know, you know, you stole it. And even if you want to, you can just put your own little spin on it. I don't know. It's just like, it's right there for the taking, man. Just watch the damn match. But anyway, so yeah, my generation is now shaping pro wrestling. I'm a little scared. Yeah, Seth Rollins is only like 3 years older than me. Ugh, it's bad. It's bad. So then we got, what happened next? All right, so we do some generic babyface offense that always looks really nice when it's the Rockers. You got your arm ringers, your monkey flips, all that good stuff. And then, so what happens is Sean hits his first monkey flip. He goes for a second one. But what had happened is the Conquistador had moved from his corner. So Sean tried to take advantage of this to monkey flip him. But the Conquistador came back into his corner, decked him. So I thought Sean sold really well, like really well, like it's like way, like, you know, I know we love B. Brian Blair, but like, come on. Like, this was like a whole other level. Sean's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sean got crazy height on the back body drop. There's a lot of double teaming. But I thought what my issue was there's just not like a lot of progress. It's like the Conquistadors are jobbers for a reason. There's just like, there was no sense of like, I'm actually going to try to win the match. They kind of just kept cheating and cheating and cheating. And I thought like we could have used, you know, maybe some more false tags or something. I don't know, something to move the match forward. I kind of thought they kind of just kept doing the same thing kind of over and over again. There was like a, nerve pinch at one point that was just long. And, and then there was like, there's other times where Sean could have at least attempted to get the tag, but he just like straight up didn't. So I don't know. I just felt like there was a lack of progress. Anyways, the Conquistador finally misses a somersault. And that was the progress I was kind of looking for. Because if he hit the somersault, that could have won the match. But by missing the somersault, you now enable the hot tag. We just need like more of that stuff. And so Sean gets the hot tag. Marty's a great hot tag. He comes from the Ricky Martel school of hot tags. You can tell. Mm-hmm. And once the Conquistadors are bumping, it's like, wow. There's a reason why these men were jobbers. They're very good at bumping. That's what you need to be when you're a jobber. So I think they spent too much time on offense. That being said, Sean's very great at selling. So it wasn't like terrible or anything. It's a, you know, a minor point. They could have progressed a little bit better. Anyway, Sean wins by jumping off of Marty's shoulders to win the match. I thought it was a very solid match. The previous show, we saw the Rockers come up a little short against the Rougeaus, but it kind of made sense. The new team on the scene, the Rougeaus were moving up, and I remember the finish being very well booked.
Yeah.
Now the Rockers are going down a peg against the Conquistadors, which is down from the Rougeaus, and you get a very solid win. And I thought the Rockers definitely bring a totally different dynamic to the WWF, and you can see that in Sean's, in the way that Sean was selling. So, yeah, I thought it was a good little showcase match. I wouldn't say it was as good as the Rougeaus match, but it was good.
I think some of your points are valid with the criticisms, but I love this match.
You loved it? Like Brother Love loved it?
Yeah, I loved this match.
You loved it?
Yeah. I mean, I love the Rockers, first and foremost. And it was just really, really good. Like, you know, they're taking on a team that has no credibility, a jobber team, basically. And they got the crowd super into it to where, you know, they had the crowd in the palm of their hand. Super hot. But, yeah, first, before I get into more of my analysis, I have to mention, of course, this is now show number 4 for us of tag teams back again being held hostage by the commentary of superstar Billy Graham. But this time around, it's actually not too bad. For this match, for me anyway, when I watched it on my computer, I couldn't get the audio up very high, or like the max audio. It just wasn't very loud. So I couldn't even hear Graham at all. And in the subsequent matches that he commentates that we're going to look at, he really wasn't that annoying at all. So maybe he's turned a corner. I don't know. But I had to point that out. Yes, we're still in the Superstar Graham commentary era here on Tag Teams Back Again. But it is improving. Anyway, as for the match, like I said, I loved it. All action and just, you know, nonstop. And the Rockers, you know, they made the Conquistadors look great. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but with their selling, they made the Conquistadors look like a you know, world-beating team at times in this match. Gave them tons of offense. Lots of cool spots by the Rockers. Like Marty said, Sean's face in peril was awesome. He's so great in that role. This is where they really got the crowd into it, was during that heat sequence. It was just a really, really great heat sequence with Sean there, I thought. Great hot tag. Great House of Fire by Marty. Yeah, and then the finish was cool too. Basically using the Bulldog's old finisher of the launch off the shoulders splash. It seems to me the Rockers never really settled on one definitive finish as a team. I could be wrong. Like, for one, they didn't use the Rocker Plex that they used in the AWA, which always kind of confused me and actually disappointed me as a young fan, because I loved that move when they were in the AWA. And I always wondered, you know, why they didn't use it in the WWF. And then it seems like they kind of had a whole bunch of different finishers, which is kind of cool, because I like wrestlers or tag teams that have multiple finishers in their arsenal, and they don't always have to rely on the same one. I think that's like a neat touch that wrestling could use more of today, quite frankly. But like I said, I thought this was an awesome match, almost like a textbook tag team match. If you wanted to like isolate a match and show it to somebody and say, this is what tag team wrestling is about. Other than the fact that the Conquistadors weren't an elite heel team, I just think the action in this match was great, and the structure was pretty much perfect for me. I thought it was really, really well done. Terrific action in this match. So, yeah.
Wow. You loved it.
Yeah, I did. I really, truly loved this match. Yeah, it's really cool. I say everybody should check it out. Yeah. Anything else to add? Or are you too shocked by my?
I'm not praise? Shocked. I mean, it was a good match. It's a very like if you wanted to show somebody what a general good execution of a tag formula is, yeah, I could see this match being shown. Yeah,
I thought it was, you know, yeah, it's not a masterpiece or like, you know, one of the greatest tag matches ever. I just think it's very, just was very well worked, very well.
I feel like you shouldn't, the first match somebody watches shouldn't be a masterpiece anyway, so.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Actually, it'd be a pretty good first match to show somebody.
Yeah, I think so. So from there, we go to Boston from the Garden, October 10th, and this is the Hart Foundation versus the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, and here we go. This is where Brother Love makes an appearance and gets involved. He is the special guest referee.
So, Brother Kelly, you're going to have to explain Brother Love to me.
Okay, yeah, so you weren't even born at this time, and I'm assuming you haven't gone back to watch a lot of the Brother Love show.
I've seen enough, like, there's like a couple major angles that happen on the Brother Love show, right?
Oh, yeah, pretty much all the major angles from 88 to 90, early 91, were all on Brother Love.
And so, and I understand who they're mocking, I got that part. But I guess I don't really – I guess – so the whole thing was he just had his own show. He didn't really manage anybody. He just existed to have a show.
Yeah, well, he came in summer of 88, I want to say it was. So not too long before this. He was, you know, he's Bruce Pritchard.
Right.
Famous behind-the-scenes person for the WWF, involved mostly in the TV production side of things. Like, he was in charge of TV production, basically. And he has entered the podcast world in the last few months with a show called Something to Wrestle With that I've listened to the first two episodes, and they're pretty good, actually. The one about Dusty Rhodes in the WWF, and then the second one on the Mega Powers angle. But as far as the Brother Love character is concerned, well, first off, he was a parody of, you know, the American televangelists at the time. Let me see if I can remember their names. Jimmy Swaggart, was that one of them?
Yeah, Jimmy Swaggart, I think, is the one they were going for mostly.
Was he the one married to Tammy, or what was her name?
Tammy Faye Baker.
Oh, no, yeah. That was a different one, I think. Anyway, there were numerous scandals that came out, sex scandals, money, like fraud related scandals, and involving these people. And so Love was a direct parody of them and his the way he talked and all that, being Southern and all that. So he basically was the new not the new Roddy Piper, but his show was the new Piper's Pit, basically, where all these, you know, he would start basically, he was a heel, you know, he was totally 100% behind the heels. He would insult the baby faces. When the heels would come on the show, he'd be, you know, just lavishing them with praise. And, you know, often it would lead to, you know, a confrontation between a heel and a babyface on his show. That would lead to a big feud. One of the bigger angles ever on the Brother Love show was when Rick Martel blinded Jake Roberts with the Arrogance cologne, which led to Roberts being blind for months and a feud between those two. That's one of the biggest ones that I remember anyway. As a kid watching this stuff, I hated Brother Love, like legit. And I was thinking about this earlier today, that he may be, like, of all the wrestlers or performers in wrestling, the one I hated the most, at legit, like in a kayfabe way, you know, before I was smartened up or whatever. I really despised him. Like, he got the intended response for me. Like, I wanted to see wrestlers beat him up and kick his ass because he was so annoying and just so smug and, you know, obviously just a total scumbag. So, yes, he was great in his role in that regard. If you're, I don't know, like, watching these back nowadays, like, I wouldn't want to watch a lot of them in a row because it'd be almost like nails on a chalkboard type stuff. But I mean, that was the thing. He was supposed to be annoying. You were supposed to want to hate him, and so he really did well in that role. He didn't do a lot of like talk show work that I can recall. Eventually, when The Undertaker comes in, he's briefly like The Undertaker's manager, right at the beginning before Paul Bearer replaces him. I'm sure he was involved in some other things in the ring, but not too many that I can think of. So here in late 1988, it looks like he did a run as like a guest referee, in a lot of these tag matches. I think mostly with the Harts and Rougeaus. Like the Harts and Rougeaus basically dominated the tag scene in the WWF between September and November of 1988, looking through all the results, because I was trying to find matches to review, and there was a ton of Harts versus Rougeau matches, like a good 6 to 8 matches on tape out there, whereas you had to like really dig to find anything else involving other teams. It was just purely the Harts and Rougeaus almost. So I don't know if there was an angle really to set this up, why Brother Love was here as the referee, But anyway, he does a fantastic job, and I thought, well, I'll give my thoughts after Marty. Marty, what did you think of this whole spectacle?
It was a lot of fun. It was a good, you know, Brother Love was a pretty good heel ref. He was definitely went a little long at the beginning. When he said Brother Anvil, that made me laugh. Part of it was I was having a hard time hearing him. So it was hard for me to like hear him. And then it was just, he sounded like he was saying the same thing over again. Lord Al seemed pretty pissed.
Oh yeah, they were all selling it like it
was. Yeah, just, he was. He seemed like he was pretty annoyed by this whole ordeal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, once it got down to wrestling, I mean, it was just all the perfect stuff that you expect. You know, Jacques pulls the hair. It doesn't matter. Brett pulls the hair. You get that quick five count. You know, yanking them off. The extremely slow counts. The extremely quick counts. I mean, this is, you know, I love that type of stuff. And so it was enjoyable. And, you know, it all built really well to, you know, Brother Love finally getting his comeuppance. And, you know, and then I thought the Rougeaus did a great job on Anvil. I thought, you know, and then I thought it was pretty funny that, yeah, Brother Love didn't call for the tag because the guy didn't have, because Brett didn't have the tag rope. So, I mean, just like every possible trick that you can do as a heel ref, they were just, you know, mm-hmm. He was doing a really perfect job. And then once Brett does get the tag, it's just, you know, just he unloads on, and Brett's offense just looks so good. I really like the reverse atomic drops. You know, you get the wicked slow count again. And then eventually they just get so sick of these wicked slow counts that they send Brother Love flying. You get to see the heart attack, which, so the heels, as heels, do they do the heart attack, or they just started as the baby faces?
No, they did it as heels. Yeah.
They did it as heels. So mm-hmm. They must've just did it only on jobbers then.
Well, one I can think of is when they won the tag belts from the Bulldogs, they definitely, used the heart attack to lead to the pin in that match.
You're right. They did do that on that one. Anyway, so heart attack, new ref comes out, and nice victory for the Hearts. There is some teasing that Brother Love is going to reverse the decision, but he ends up getting sent packing. Not before he actually, you know, kicks Brother Dave in the gut pretty good. Brother Dave Hebner, that is. Love him.
Was that Dave or was it Earl?
I don't know. I guess it's, they're twins.
Yeah. I think it may have been Earl, because I think now, after they did the whole twin ref angle for Hogan and Andre in the main event match, I think Earl basically became the referee and Dave became the backstage dude that you would only see later when they would break up. Guys would come out in coats and break up brawls like him and Rene Goulet and
Tony Gurria
and Billy Red Lions and that. I think that's what happened. Anyway, I really enjoyed this too.
I think you would love it.
Yeah. I love all the bells and whistles sort of stuff that goes into wrestling, you know, with the gimmick ref and all that. And I thought this was just great pro wrestling right here. So at the beginning, the Hearts and the Rougeaus both come out to no music. And I mentioned this on the last show, how we're in this sort of weird period for WWF where there's a lot of acts have music, but a lot of acts also don't have music. So it's before music becomes completely prevalent. And it was funny that Brother Love, of course, has music, though. Of all the acts, he's the one who has a musical entrance. And yeah, he comes out immediately, you know, hugs all the heels. And he called Boston a city of losers, Marty, at one point.
I didn't hear that because I was having trouble with the audio. So I'm a little hot about this.
Well, this was before the Pats, before the Red Sox broke the curse.
I would imagine that I think the Celtics lost in the finals. Oh, well, yeah, it's still October, so they were still playing.
I was going to say at least the Celtics were coming off recent championships.
Was the 88, they lost to the Lakers, right? No, 88, they lost to the Pistons. Yeah, in 88 they lost to the Pistons in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yes, that's what happened. But anyway,
isn't a good time for Boston. Yeah, we're on the downswing.
That's true, because you wouldn't have another title until the Patriots won their first Super Bowl, right? So
that is true. That is true.
A while away.
Brother Love was a prophet.
Yes. But yeah, it was a very long segment. It worked. I mean, the crowd started littering the ring with garbage. There was really great heat for this. This whole match basically felt very Southern. It's unusual for the WWF to have this feel for a match where you have the heel referee and of course it's a tag match too. So this felt very much like a Southern tag match.
The whole show, this whole tag team's back again feels really Southern.
That's a good point.
I feel like the Rockers with their a lot of selling.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, once you get to the Brainbusters, I mean, that's friggin' Jim Crockett promotion.
Right.
Match.
Right. No, that's a great point. So, yes, we've entered the Southern era of WWF tag team wrestling, I guess.
Yeah.
Love was, I mean, this whole match was just about Love being like so biased. With the super slow counts and then the super fast counts. And the commentators were actually really good here. And this was Billy Graham, Hayes, Lord Al, and it was Trongard too.
It was Ron Trongard. I love Ron Trongard's voice.
I do.
He says some really stupid things.
I know. I think I've talked about this before. But when I was a kid, I thought he was one of the best commentators, mostly because I loved his voice. Like, he made everything sounds so important.
He does have that really like good announcer voice. He just
right. No, I agree. He's not the best as far as like actually commenting on the matches. But anyway, here I thought they were all very good because they fully, you know, were just selling the miscarriage of justice that was going on throughout the whole match. Just total hatred, basically, for Love. So maybe there's hope for Superstar Graham after all. We'll see. And then the crowd was really into this too, like the action, the actual tag wrestling. And Brett was great, like you mentioned, great House of Fire. And yeah, it was a cool finish too. Like they tossed Love out of the ring. I mean, I guess he could have called for the bell right there. Like if we're looking at that logic and everything for a disqualification, but he didn't for whatever reason. Hebner came in to make the call or to make the count. And yeah, you mentioned Hebner getting kicked in the gut. It looked like Love basically kicked him in the balls after the match. So that added to the, added to the heat. I thought this was just great.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty Southern finish when you think about it, too.
Yeah. Everything about it.
Like, it's not like super WCW where, like, the finish doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But, you know, it is, like, Southern in the sense that, yeah, it really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But the commentators pointed out that the Hart Foundation should have been disqualified. And that is true.
Right. And I think Hayes especially, like, took that line. Because he's always the one to kind of be the voice of reason for the heels or whatever, or to if someone is going to support the heels, it'll be Lord Al.
Whenever Lord Al says something, I just am prone to disagree with him because I find him annoying. So I was like, I hope the Hart Foundation wins, and they did.
Yeah. This was super fun. Great healing.
Yes, Brother Love. I think he wins heel of the show.
Yeah, he was awesome here. And then the finish was great, like perfect to as a satisfying finish after all the healing, all the shit that he pulled in the match that he got his comeuppance at the end. I mean, that's again, this is textbook pro wrestling right here. 2 for 2 on the night. All right, and we're sticking with these same two teams, but we're subtracting Brother Love from the equation. And we're moving back to New York for October 24th at MSG, Hearts and Rougeaus. Marty, what did you think of this one?
All right, so case in point on the Ron Trongard says stupid things. He says at the beginning of the match, I think the Hart Foundation are making their entrance. You know, they've had their fill up to you know where. What? Like, what, that's not even a
sign. I know.
Like, what are you censoring? Like, it was one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
TV back in the 80s.
What was that?
Said you couldn't say neck on TV back in the 80s.
Yeah. I know, it was too scandalous.
Yeah.
It's one of the silliest things I've ever heard. I was just like, oh, this guy's an idiot. I thought the subtraction of Brother Love brought the match down, Brother Kelly. What did you think of that?
Well, I mean, it's a totally different match. That's, you know, when I get to my comments, well, I'll say it right now. I think that's what I liked about this is that it was totally different than the previous match.
I guess that's true. That is true. This was wrestled as more of a straight tag,
yeah.
Which I think was kind of my, I don't know, I was also kind of at the end of the... I watched this right before I came on the show, so I was a little tired from work. Maybe that's where this is coming all from. That being said, Anvil shouldn't start matches. Brett should start matches. Like, the whole Anvil thing was just like, it was just existed. But once Brett got in, we, you know, things picked up. You know, we refused the handshake. Mm-hmm. You know, we got high fives. We got Jacques dancing circles. Grabbing hair, you know, it's all that cool stuff. And then, you know, finally Jacques gets his comeuppance with he sets too early for a monkey flip. Brett hits him with the elbow. He gets the high five. We got the Rougeaus hugging in the corner, getting heel heat for hugs. I think it was on the very first tag teams back again or something. I said, hugs should be heel heat, not face heat, baby. And so I love that. Love seeing the Rougeaus, you know, using the hug for heel heat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and oh, love the old school Hart Foundation cheating in the corner with the tag rope choke. That was sweet. And then I don't know what happened. I looked away, and somehow the Rougeaus beat down Anvil. I missed the transition to the heel heat. I think it was just a double team. What happened?
I never really note these things.
To me, transitions are everything. And it's hard. So I watched. So I don't know if you have this problem. I'm going to bring this up on air. Maybe somebody else has had this problem. They know how to fix it. Feel free to call in. Not call in. Sorry.
We're not live.
You can either tweet me at Superstar Sleaze, SLEEZE, or you can comment at ProWrestlingOnly.com. When I watch videos on Daily Motion on my computer, they lag like hell. But if I watch them on the Roku that I have in my house, they stream fine. But it's a pain in the ass to rewind on the Roku and then, like, end up in the right spot. And then it's got to, like, retrieve and reload, and it takes the whole thing. So, like, I was like, I'm not going to rewind to find out what the transition was. If it was on a computer, I could just click back and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But anyways, so if anybody's out there and they know how to make it Daily Motion run on my computer so it doesn't lag, that'd be very helpful. So,
I always watch on my computer. I have a Roku. I tried watching YouTube on my Roku a few times, but it just didn't seem, I don't know, like it wasn't necessary. So I pretty much just watch everything on my computer, and it's, I don't know, Daily Motion is definitely not as smooth as YouTube, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it's actually to the point where it's unwatchable on Daily Motion on my computer.
I don't think I have that degree of a problem, no.
No. I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with, like, my hard drive accelerator. I don't know. Sometimes I read that these accelerators are the thing. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. But so if anybody has a clue on how to fix it so Daily Motion works on my computer, that would be good. It's just like this, you know, on the Roku, I got to like search. I got to like, hit the enter button on a bunch of different letters, and yeah. I got to match the fucking title exactly. Excuse my language. Exactly to what the title of the video
yes.
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if I don't, I can't find it. So, yeah, no. It's kind of a hassle. Yeah. The one nice thing about the Roku is it is on the big screen.
Right.
Because I have my Roku hooked up to, like, you know, my you know, 45-inch TV or something. So that is a little bit nicer than my, like, I don't know, I think it's a 14-inch, maybe 16-inch monitor.
Right, I agree. I just find it's just not worth the hassle to...
Yeah, it's not worth the hassle, but when the Daily Motion is, you know, completely unwatchable, I watch that there. And I watch the YouTube videos on the old computer here. So I tend to watch what I do. Yeah. All right. Well, we won't get into my watching habits. I have a cool trick for the network, but I'm not going to, I won't get into it. So anyways, this all started because all I wanted to know was how the heels took control, because that matters to me, but I don't know. So Raymond starts choking Anvil with the tag rope. It's symmetry, baby. This is the stuff I enjoy in professional wrestling. Anvil's too heavy to pick up. Anvil makes the tag to Brett. I kind of liked it. You know, tease the heat segment on Anvil, but he uses his fatness to avoid it. I thought that was pretty good. And so we got the two reverse atomic drops by Brett. Double noggin-nogger, backbreaker. But then again, in the chaos, they double-team Brett. And so now we get the real heat segment. You know, it's the usual Rougeau stuff. You know, you get the Rougeau gut buster, the Rougeau camel clutch. Rougeau, sorry, that didn't make any sense. The Rougeau ab stretch. And finally, Brett gets the elbow when Raymond sets too early. Jacques misses the splash. Here comes the big Anvil. Big back body drop on Jacques. I thought the Anvil's hot tag was a little awkward. Like at times, like they kind of had to reposition in the corner. I think there was something else where somebody wasn't in the right spot again. It was a little off. It was not a Ricky Martel smoothest silk hot tag.
No.
Slingshot Anvil spear, which I like. The heart decapitation. Brett dropkicks Jacques. Heart attack. The bell's ringing. We're informed that Jacques is ringing the bell, which I thought was actually a neat heel tactic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say the time limit's expired. And it's like, okay, the time limit expired. And I thought they worked the time limit to a nice fever pitch. We got the heart attack. But we kind of protect the Rougeaus a little bit, but we protect them in an interesting way. It's not just a draw. It's the heels telling you it's a draw. You know, the heels are bringing the bell, so they're kind of forcing the issue with the draw. I thought, you know, I'm like, oh, this is a good finish. It's a good finish. I like it. And then they kind of do the whole, will they take the 5 more minutes? Will they not take the 5 more minutes? I text Kelly, do I need to watch this last 5 minutes? And he says, yes, I do. So I was like, all right, I'm going to watch the last 5 minutes. Lo and behold, Pat Patterson declares that his fellow French Canadians need to get back in the ring. There's 3 more minutes. And then nothing happens. It was the silliest 3 minutes. Like, I mean, the things happened, but it was just like it didn't work to a fever pitch. It just kind of like was there. And then it was a time limit draw for real this time. I was like, yeah, they should have stuck the original finish. I was kind of miffed by the whole thing. That's what it was. That's what it was.
Yeah, I agree that the finish was super convoluted and really didn't lead to anything at all. Anyway, I'll start from the beginning. So yeah, this was, you know, going to be a long match, going to be a draw. So there was a lot of stalling. The Hearts had a long shine at the beginning too. And so yeah, it was a while before the Rougeaus took over. But I really liked Brett's face and peril sequence. Thought that was really good. The first hot tag to Anvil was really good. Good House of Fire. The crowd, of course, really got into it as they built, and things were humming along pretty good. And then we went to the shenanigans with the multiple false endings to this match. I don't know. So Jacques clearly rang the bell, I guess, but then the referee basically assumed that the time limit had expired, and Finkel even came in and announced that. So there was a bit of a sort of logic error there, or logic gap or whatever, where why didn't the timekeeper say something, you know, obviously this.
Yeah, well, I know the timekeeper should have said something to somebody.
Yeah, so there you have that. And then, lots of stalling. Pat Patterson out of nowhere. I mean, of course, yes, he was backstage. He was the booker. He was, you know, doing a lot of things for the company, but rarely would he make an appearance on camera anymore at this point. So it was kind of cool to see Pat just appear on the scene and basically force the match to its conclusion. But you're right, you know, nothing happened again.
Did he book this shitty finish? I can't believe he booked this shitty finish.
That's what I was thinking. It seems like, I don't know, maybe it was something that he did back in San Francisco in the 70s or something, and he thought it was, or it worked really well or something there.
I have no idea what this finish gained anybody.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't seem to have, like, a point to it. You know, why did we have to have these multiple stops just to get to this? It was strange, yeah.
The original draw finish was a good enough draw finish.
Yeah, they should have just went with the straight draw.
They could have went, and even with Jacques ringing the bell, it's kind of like a bit more of an underhanded draw that they're escaping with their,
And if you're going to restart the match, then the heels should definitely lose.
They definitely should. And that, I knew as soon as they hit the heart attack and they didn't win that I was like, they're not going to do it again. They're not going to hit the heart attack again. Yeah. So I was kind of like, this is very perplexing.
And I looked ahead. It doesn't appear. Well, for sure, they didn't have another match at MSG with the two teams. So it's not like this led to like a match where they had to have, for example, maybe a special guest referee.
Oh, they didn't have a November or a February match?
I don't believe so.
No, but the feud does continue, right?
It does continue, but not in New York or not at MSG.
Do they have a six-man with Dino Bravo?
Yes, that's at the first, or at the Royal Rumble coming up.
Okay.
Again.
So it does continue, but you're saying it just doesn't continue at MSG.
No, there was no further matches between the two of them, which is weird because this finish seemed to suggest you would have to have, you know, a blow-off or some other match based on what happened here. But no, nothing.
When did this Saturday night's main event air?
The end of October.
So after this match?
So after this, yeah.
This ruins one of my talking points about that match, though.
Who knows? Things were much more complicated back then because you had all these different markets with different specific feuds going on that, you know, ran in one city but weren't running in the other city. Then you had Saturday night's main event and the TV on Saturday, which was the grand narrative or whatever, the main narrative. And but when you try and piece it all together, watching these different house shows, it's pretty complicated how it all works out. And a lot of feuds just ended without a resolution. They just stopped wrestling and that's moved on.
They just stopped wrestling one another.
Yeah, well, from like a modern, you know, looking at it from a modern perspective, it seems strange that these feuds, these programs would just end with no resolution to them. But that's sort of how it often happened back then.
I guess that's true. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Probably it's easier to book that way.
Yeah.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines. our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all Pro Wrestling Super Shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
So we're staying in the same place, same date here, and now we're in for a title match with the champions Demolition taking on the new team of the Rockers. They're rocketing up the ranks quickly. This is probably their first title match in the WWF, or one of their first for sure. I think I'd seen this match before, but I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, Marty, what did you think of this battle between Demos and Rockers?
I loved it. Okay. It's the best match. Yeah, it's not the best match that we've ever seen, but it's really, really damn good. It's one of the best matches. I would say it's probably top five.
Okay.
Top five that we've seen on Tag Teams Back Again.
One of these days we need to come up with our top tens, I think, so that when we do these references, we have something
that I get called out. Yeah, yeah. I can't just say everything's in my top five.
Yeah, because exactly. Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I mean, so Charles is doing the top 500 of the 90s, and you kind of realize that not everything can be a top 10 match once you have to do a top 500.
Well, yeah. That's a big undertaking.
You know, because you see some really damn good matches at like 250, and you're like, damn it, I thought that'd be in the top 100. But then I'm like, well, there is probably 100. Match 150 matches better. So yeah, it's not an easy task, but I will do it at some point. So yeah, so I felt like this, and this is gonna be crazy. I think a lot of people, a lot of Crockett fans, a lot of wrestling purists are gonna be gonna get on me for this, but I thought this was a better version of the Rock and Rolls versus the Russians. Yeah, I said it.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did. And part of the reason is because the Rock and Rolls and Russians went way too long, in my opinion. And this was a compressed version, and they you know, I thought it was hot, and they stuck to their story. They hit all the key points, and they brought it home. There was no fucking – excuse my language. Sorry. I worked 10 and a half hours today. There was no Robert Gibson selling forever heat segment. You know, that's always been my contention with the Rock and Roll Russians.
And just
match.
To be clear, which Rocker or Rock and Roll versus Russians match?
The debut, so the 85 title change. The one where David Crockett goes nuts on commentary. It's the Rock and Roll's debut in the territory. 85.
Okay.
Khrushchev and Ivan. Yeah, I mean, the crowd's hot. It's a great match. It's a very great match. But it's just, I thought the Gibson, it's like a half an hour match when it needs to be like a 20-minute match, I think is my main contention.
Okay.
But anyway, so this match is great. So this is like when, so we always, you know, one of the talking points is, you know, against demolition, you have to double up your moves. So this is a combination of the Rockers needing to use their speed, and double up their moves. I mean, not all, very, you know, usually we have the narrative and it's totally based on the moves. Sometimes the announcers add to the narrative, but very rarely do we get a wrestler verbally explaining the narrative so succinctly as Smash does when he says, "Stay in one place," to Marty. That is it. That is the match in a nutshell, is Smash yelling to Marty, "Stay in one place." And what's crazy is, if you think about it, I always realized it, but saying it now, Smash and Khrushchev were, Smash was in both matches.
Yes, I didn't even think of that, but yes.
Yeah, Smash was in both matches, so. Right, so basically, Demolition seems like they're going to overwhelm the Rockers because they're more powerful, but there's, the Rockers always seem to be able to get out of it through speed, through doubling it up. Rapid arm work, like, I mean, that arm work was, oh, it was so smooth, and it was quick, and a lot of tags. The urgency, like, is something that I think is missing from a lot of WWF tags. And when you see a really great WWF tag, it really, you know, shows you how good it can be. You know, the Rockers moving that quickly. Thought the crowd was going bonkers for this. I know Kelly's going to have that comment. I know he is. I'm going to steal it for him, but it was really
one of my cliches.
And so the Rockers were over. Marty does a quick face in peril, but the real fireworks start when Sean crashes and burns to the floor when Axe holds down the top rope. So now we got the Sean face in peril. And, so everything is focused on Sean's lower back. We got the sledges, we got the bear hugs, and we even get a Boston crab. Very psychologically sound. And so, you know, just really good stuff. Nothing. It's lean and mean. And then we get into, Marty's hot tag here. And so the Rockers are keeping off, the demos off balance with a lot of quick work. They're doubling up their moves. We see the double drop kick. We see the double slam, the double clothesline. Everything's got double on it. And the Rockers look like they're going to get the pin, but Axe breaks it up. So now the ref has got Shawn Michaels' attention. And Smash carries Marty over to be punched in the face by Axe for the pin. I thought, just like, if you're talking about going from point A to B to C, just really perfect. It's really tight. It's really action packed. It probably doesn't have the grand narrative or like all the drama to be like, you know, one of the best tag team matches of all time. But I thought for what they were trying to accomplish, they hit it out of the park. And, I only do star ratings when I like really like something. So 4.25 on this one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I thought it was an awesome match. I mean, the Rockers are great. Demolition has been really good in 1988, I think. And, it continues here. Just a good, match between two teams as far as styles go. You have the young, speedy team in the Rockers, and then you have the brute force team in Demolition, so that makes for a great matchup. A lot of support from the MSG faithful for the demos at the beginning. A lot of cheers. So it's kind of foreshadowing events that will be upon us very soon. But the Rockers were also super over. And, you know, they'd only been around for a few months in the territory, so they've gotten over quite quick. And, yeah, I just really like this, or love this match, actually. Great work by the Rockers on the arms of Axe and Smash with quick tags. The crowd really ate that up. That really got the crowd into it right at the beginning. And Sean, again, in his face in peril was awesome. Marty with the hot tag and the House of Fire was awesome. Just a great, like a double team House of Fire at one point. And it was really cool. And the end, like the finish, You know, it wasn't. It was a pin. It was a clean victory, basically, for the demos. But it wasn't like a decisive victory as far as like writing the Rockers off completely. Marty got hit with a huge clothesline, basically, while Smash held him. Axe hit him with the clothesline. So it was a very decisive blow, but not in a way that made the Rockers look like they were totally done as challengers, I didn't think. So they were somewhat protected with the loss. And yeah, I really don't have much more to say. This is really, 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 really good, great tag match. And yeah, we're actually, we've seen, I think the footage we've gone through so far has been really solid. And it continues with this one. Yeah, really, really good match. So now we're going to go to Saturday Night's main event for a match. This was taped October 25th, and it aired October 29th, coming to us from the Baltimore Arena. So I mentioned Crockett before, and Marty has mentioned Crockett, and earlier in 1988, one of their most famous pay-per-views ever, the Great American Bash, was at the Baltimore Arena, as it would be for several incarnations of that show. And so here, I don't think that WWF ran the Baltimore Arena too often. I thought that was more of an NWA arena.
Baltimore is an underrated wrestling town.
Yeah, well, it was.
Yeah. I feel like Baltimore always has is always really hot for Crockett.
Yeah, it was one of Crockett's main northern, if you want to consider it northern, cities.
Oh, no, there's Waffle Houses in Maryland. I think it's a southern state.
It's right on the line, basically, almost, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Mason-Dixon line is Mason-Dixon line has Maryland south. Maryland didn't secede during the Civil War.
Right.
I would say Maryland is a northern state. It's very close.
Yeah, very close. So Baltimore and Philly were kind of like the two that really Crockett was able to make a dent into.
Yeah, I thought Baltimore was always a very good town for Crockett. I thought they had some of the best Crockett crowds
ever. Yep.
Like even just like right up there with the Carolinas.
Yep. So this is Demolition versus the Hart Foundation. So a rematch from SummerSlam. And, yeah, basically kind of the end of this storyline, I guess you could say. Marty, what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I thought this was a way to kickstart the Rougeau's Hart Foundation feud. That's not the case. But it basically seemed like it was transitioning the Hart Foundation from Demolition to the Rougeau's.
Yeah.
It seems like that. And yeah, maybe the timing just was a little off. Yeah, I thought it was pretty similar to SummerSlam, just, you know, a lot shorter because it's on Saturday Night's main event. Just, you know, just not as good. You know, so basically, you know, Brett does well for about a minute, ends up, you know, in trouble against Demolition. Brett does a good job getting Demolition's offense over. I thought he did a really good job there. And then we get the hot tag to Anvil. And was it me or the drop kicks a little low from Anvil? Could've got a lot more height on those.
Well, I mean,
He hits his running power slam, but gets broken up. And then we got Mr. Fuji and Jimmy Hart. I should have mentioned that they were both at ringside for Demolition. Fuji, obviously, Demolition's manager, Jimmy Hart, has his vendetta against his former charges, the Hart Foundation. And this is at which point the Rougeau's sneak out. Fuji gets decked by Brett, and he sells for Brett. All right, thank you. SummerSlam, that was one of my big pet peeves, was Fuji's refusal to sell for Anvil. Anvil's got the mouth of the self by the collar. And then the Rougeau's toss the megaphone to Axe, who nails Anvil for the win. Yeah, I thought it was just it was more of a backdrop for the angle to move the Hart Foundation to the Rougeau's. And then you're gonna end up with Demolition against the Pirates of Pain anyway, so, and Demolition's gonna be turning babyface soon, so it's not, you know, it was a good transition match.
Yeah, Saturday night main event matches are interesting because it's hard to pull them out of the context of the whole show and really be satisfied with them because they're just, you know, these bite-sized matches that are often more angle than match. That was, I think, kind of a main characteristic of Saturday Night's Main Event as a whole, is that the matches kind of had a dual purpose always, that they were matches, of course, but most of the time they were advancing a storyline, doing an angle for a new feud or something like that. So Saturday Night's Main Event is a show, definitely, I think, you need to kind of watch the whole thing from start to finish. And, you know, it was never meant to be, you know, cut up and you just focus on single matches. I don't think that's a really interesting experience because, you know, comparing them to the other matches we watch from the house shows, the Saturday Night's Main Event matches we've been watching lately anyway have been pretty forgettable. So this one's, yeah, pretty quick. Like you said, a shorter version of the SummerSlam match, basically. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, nothing much to say from me here. I mean, again, I'll mention the crowd. The crowd was definitely red hot. Like, we've had nothing but hot crowds for all these tag matches. And so this was definitely, like they say, it's been... It's kind of a cliche that this was the golden age of WWF tag team wrestling, but there's a reason. I mean, the tag team division was super over with the fans and was a key part of the show. The teams were always over, and the crowd was totally into it. So we only have one more match to look at, and it's an interesting one, too. We're going to Philly now, the Spectrum, November 12th. Tron Guard, Graham, and Hayes on commentary again. They were getting around. They did all the different arenas at this point in time, it seems. And we're seeing a new team. A very exciting new team, in fact. Basically, we had the Rockers debut a few shows ago on the babyface side of things, and now we have the big debut on the heel side of things for the tag teams. And that's Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, the Brain Busters, fresh from Crockett, fresh from the NWA, if you will. They debuted in the territory October 5th at the TV tapings in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So this was only a month later, basically. One of the all-time great teams. I had them at number 6 in my top 10, I believe. I'm not sure where you had them, Marty, in your top.
I think I had them in like 12 or 13 or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly where.
Definitely. I mean, I love both guys. Love Arn Anderson. Love Tully Blanchard. There's a modern team today in NXT for the WWE, The Revival, who are very much...
see them on Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, NXT's in Boston on Thursday. I assume they're going to be on the show. I would only imagine.
I think they are. Anyway, they're definitely like a modern, I say modern version of the Anderson-Blanchard team, basically. Their style is very, very similar. Yeah, so now I'm excited for the Brainbusters here because they're going to provide us with a lot of great matches going forward into 1989. But here they're against the Young Stallions, Paul Roma and Jimmy Powers. I believe, only seen one of their matches together, and that was against the Islanders. I think that was the only Young Stallions match we've looked at. They weren't exactly the main part of the division. They were, you know, just a rung above being jobbers, basically, and they had been jobbers for years before they teamed up. But we should have maybe looked at some of their matches that they had with the Hart Foundation in 1987, because they did have an angle, and it was based over their entrance music. So I noticed that the Young Stallions have a theme here. And as I've mentioned, a lot of teams didn't at the time, a lot of wrestlers didn't. And then I had to do a bit of research just to, you know, refresh my memory. And their theme is called Crank It Out. And it's written by Jimmy Hart. And the storyline was in 87 that Jimmy Hart, and I don't remember this really at all, that Jimmy Hart came up with this theme, and it was supposed to be for the Harts. But somehow the Stallions ended up getting it, and this was an angle. And that was what led to their feud, was that the Harts were upset that the Stallions stole their theme song. Had you ever heard of that angle before?
I did not know that. Yeah. I had not heard of that angle.
No, like I said,
actually a halfway decent reason for an angle.
Yeah, but I don't remember it. And I was watching, you know, religiously at that time. I don't remember that angle at all. But anyway, that's the story of why the Young Stallions have theme music. And so anyway, we're probably not going to get too many more opportunities to look at their matches, because I don't think they exist as a team into 1989 much, if at all. I think their run is coming to an end.
When does Power and Glory start? 19?
That starts in 1990. There's like this period where...
So what does Paul Roma do?
Roma goes back to being a jobber, basically. And that was sort of the deal. Hercules had slipped down a rung, basically, and he was basically entering jobber territory, and that's kind of why they got together in a way. We'll probably look at that whole thing. Anyway,
no, I've never seen Power and Glory.
You've never? Oh wow. Well, we'll be watching quite a few of them when we get to that point, I'm assuming. So here we are, Brainbusters.
Yeah.
Brainbusters and Young Stallions from Philly. What did you think of this one, Marty?
You know, women love the Young Stallions. They're loaded with stamina. Did you hear that from Ron Trongard?
If I did, I forgot. But yeah, that sounds about right.
Yes, I thought that was pretty funny. So this features future Horsemen and future Arn Anderson tag team partner Paul Roma.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. You know, I don't think Arn Anderson thought he was looking across the ring from a future Horseman at the time.
Nope.
I don't think so. Very Crockett style match. A lot of bumping, a lot of stooging by the heels. You don't get more textbook heel than friggin' Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard doing everything they could to just look like, you know, make the Young Stallions look like $1 million. You know, you get Arn, you know, he's a little cocky at first. He sends Jimmy Powers down with a shoulder tackle, gets his little high five from Tully, slaps Powers. You know, he's really feeling it. You know, Powers gets a little hot because of it. Before you know it, Powers got the schoolboy. And Arn's gets a little pissed. He attacks behind all these things. Just, you know, very heelish. Not a single babyface thing from Arn Anderson. Powers gets a dropkick. Tully eats one. Then they both eat body slams. It's just a constant feeding of moves for a good babyface shine. I mean, this is really, I don't usually like to call wrestling matches a carry job because, you know, I'm not a wrestler, so it's a little hard for me to judge when something's a carry job. But this seemed like a pretty obvious carry job with Arn and Tully just leading Young Stallions by the hand to having not just a good match, but I would say a very good match with them. And then Tully Blanchard, you know, now that we're going to be talking about the Brainbusters, I can talk some more of my NWA talking points. So if there was, this guy just did not love, Tully Blanchard just loved getting his ass kicked. He just loved the idea of very self-effacing. Just, you know, he was gonna bump and he was gonna stooge. He was gonna clown around. It's just great. Yeah. And so, you know, he missed an elbow. He gets pissed. He's kicking the ropes. He takes a hip toss. He's crawling on his knees to tag out.
Yeah.
He's grabbing the ropes by like the toes of his feet. He's freaking out on everything. I like the Stallions distracting the ref and then they miss Telly's tag. It's like there was like a bunch of reverse psychology like that throughout with the Stallions switching out and all that stuff. one of the commentators got all bitchy. It's like, what an asshole. You're not having fun. Have some fun, commentator man. It's probably Lord Alfred Hayes. He sucks. Tully rakes the eyes. You know, Tully's. The only offense Tully's getting is raking the eyes, of course. Oh, I was wondering. You think all this babyface cheating was for the Philly crowd to get the Young Stallions over? Because the Young Stallions looked like a bunch of chumps. You know, they were I feel like the Brainbusters knew this would get the Stallions over.
Yeah, that's possible because, I mean, it's Philly, and, I mean, in this match in particular, the crowd was in full heel-loving mode. They were totally behind Blanchard and Anderson. I mean, and the cheers coming from the Stallions were totally all, you know, either young kids or women. It was
totally.
It was pretty. I mean, the Stallions didn't have a chance.
I think the Brainbusters were trying to get the Stallions over.
Yeah, but they were so pretty, boy, the Young Stallions. There was no way, no chance in hell that the Stallions would get over with the male.
At least they made the effort.
No, you got to try. Yeah.
Anyway, so you got to try, right? You know, and that's why Tully and Arn are the best. They try. Good wishbone sell by Tully. It was, and then finally, there's the Tully Blanchard sell that atomic drop is like a 9 on the Rick Rude scale. Like, that was a good one. He really like got all jelly legged on that one. But as he was going up for the atomic drop, he gets the tag out to Arn, and so Arn is able to, sends him outside, levels him on the outside. We hit the heat segment. We get the spine buster. You know, we get false hot tags. We're just getting that false hot tag where they get so close and then Arn pulls them down into a reverse atomic drop was great. Tully was very pleased with his drop kick. The abdominal stretch complete with cheating. It was just, you know, textbook heel work. Nice Jimmy Powers crossbody hope spot. Powers gets the suplex. We get the hot tag to future Four Horsemen, Paul Roma. He uses some rights and throws the busters into each other. But a running double clothesline does them in. I thought the babyface shine was the best part of the match. Thought the heat segment was pretty solid. And the finish was what it needed to be. Brainbusters get the win. A little nefarious tactics, but clearly the better team. Moving on to the Rackers, baby.
Yeah, I guess that's actually the beginning of 1989. That's the marriage there with those two teams. That's something to look forward to. Yeah, I thought this was good. Everybody looked good. Brainbusters looked really, really good. Great, you know, one of the great teams of all time. The Stallions were fine. There was no problems in any of the work. I just wasn't. I mean, I'm not invested at all with the Young Stallions. I couldn't give two shits about them. So that's one problem. But
right. Why is that?
It's funny.
Why is that? They're two good looking guys. They got plenty of stamina, resilience.
Right.
What's with the hate for the Young Stallions?
The hate. I don't know. Even as a kid, I didn't like them at all. I just, there's something about them that I just, I don't know. I can't even really explain it. It's just, they're too bland.
It's just something that you feel in your gut.
Yeah, I think part of it is the pretty boy thing too. Like, they're too good looking.
You don't like pretty boys.
I don't like pretty boys. You know, they have like perfect teeth.
You don't like pretty boys.
They're just too much of that.
Like, you don't like me now.
Yeah. Well, if you want to compare yourself to Jim Powers and Paul Roma, go right ahead there, Marty. I think you can aim higher than that in the wrestler comparison scale. So I'm doing you a favor. but the match was fine. I was fascinated by the crowd because it was total, like I said, Philly heel mode craziness. We're seeing that more and more. We're getting closer to the 90s. And you could see the typical ECW fans that would be in the front row of all the ECW shows. You could see those guys the crowd. They were there, and they would be they weren't as visible as they would be for the ECW shows, of course, but they were usually in the front row area.
I didn't even see them.
Yeah, right at the beginning, especially, they're jawing with the Brainbusters as they come to the ring. You know, Hat Guy and his buddy, the ones that wear the Hawaiian shirts.
I know who they are. I was surprised.
It was a brief, you know, blink and you miss it type thing, but they're there. And they would be there in a lot of the Spectrum shows, of course. Later for WCW, the first Halloween Havoc at the Civic Center in Philly, you can see them, you know, very obviously in the crowd throughout that show. And that's in 1989. They were, of course, there. And you can, with them being there, you can feel the change now that, you know, Philly was always, a rough city and always embraced the heels. We've seen that back in the early 80s on Titans and stuff. But the vibe now is becoming more and more dominant to where the crowd is like, the majority are now heel fans, I would say, in Philly. And, of course, that's, you know, where we're headed in the 90s. So, I'm so happy that the Busters are here because I'm going to get to see a lot of stuff I haven't seen before with them. And you mentioned Tully and all his great work. He's great playing, you know, the heel in peril. It was like as great as Shawn Michaels is playing face in peril. Tully is like the great heel in peril of all time, or one of them. And he was so awesome in this match. Another thing about the crowd, when Arn gave the Spine Buster, there was a huge pop from the crowd. So even at that time, an Arn Spine Buster was like a signature spot and worthy of like a huge pop from the heel fans.
The Busters had worked Philadelphia quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly. This was, you know, the crowd was very familiar with them. Like I mentioned, Philly being a big time NWA city as well as being a WWF city. So
yeah, they had just dropped the tag titles the month before to the Midnight Express.
Yes, in Philly. Yeah, there you go. And I'm supposedly the historian. There's Marty bringing up the history that
we're the only two Brainbuster champions in the history of Brainbuster.
There's
or not anymore.
That's right. And to pull back the curtain a little bit, Marty is quite the historian in his everyday life, maybe more so than I am, actually.
I don't know about that, but how did you even know that?
Well, you've brought it up numerous times in chat.
I guess I do bring up history every once in a while on the show, yeah.
Yeah, well, not on the like in our private sort of conversations and stuff. It's come up, so yeah.
I dropped a great Silk Road reference on Facebook yet today. Really, just boom, it was great. But anyways, I'll have to come up with some great history reference for today, but I'm running out of time. I'll have to think of something.
Anyway, this was cool. It was a match I hadn't seen before. I like to always get all the different arenas in the territory represented, so this checked off the Philly box. So yeah, that's it for tonight. Let's go over our awards, shall we say. Marty, your pick for best match tonight?
I thought this was a badass show. I thought there was I don't know, what was our last show? Our last show was what, the SummerSlam show?
Yeah.
That was kind of a rough show.
Yeah, there wasn't much outside of actually the final two matches from SummerSlam that we watched.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Demolition versus Heart Foundation was really good. Okay, yeah, that was good. That was pretty good.
No.
All right, I thought this was a better show top to bottom.
Yeah, oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, much better show top to bottom. I'm going to say, though, even though I thought, ignoring the Saturday night's main event match, the other four matches, I'd all say good. I'd say all around, you know, your three-star mark. So I think Demolition Rocker is really a head and shoulders above the rest for me.
Head and shoulders above. I think it's closer for me. I mean, I really liked Rockers and Conquistadors. I really liked the whole tag with Brother Love in Boston. I thought that was so fun. But yeah, Demolition Rockers is a notch above those. It was really, really good. Because with Rockers and Conquistadors, the drawback is having a team in the Conquistadors that you don't take seriously. And here, of course, you have Rockers against the tag team champions, a very, very serious tag team. And yeah, it was, like I said, a great clash of styles. And it was worked really, really well. So yeah, that's definitely the match of the night. And best face in peril.
Best face in peril. Oof, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with an oddball pick. I'm going to go with Shawn Michaels in the Conquistadors match, actually.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
So when we say best face in peril, we're talking about the babyface's role in the face in peril, not the entire segment in general.
Yeah, the babyface's role, yeah. And it can be a combination of matches, too. Like, it doesn't have to be just one match.
Oh, I see. Well, then Shawn Michaels wins hand down because he's got the Demolition match and the Conquistadors match. Right. I thought I had to pick one performance in one match. Okay, yeah, Shawn Michaels.
Right.
Yeah, we might as well rename the Shawn Michaels Award at this point, but anyways.
Going forward. Yeah, well, he's taken over now.
Yeah, he's taken over from B. Brian Blair. Maybe we could call it the B. Brian Blair Legacy Award just for you, Kelly.
Well, thank you. Well, there were several. I mean, Tito was a great face in peril, too. And, well, as was Rick Martel, of course. Martel was really the best because he was also a great hot tag. He could do
it. Yeah, Ricky Martel, he could do it all. He could tag wrestle by himself.
Yeah, he could do it all. Well, these post-show awards are pretty casual things. I don't know. I haven't really put too much thought into them. If we should.
Oh, I put zero thought into them. Every time you bring it up, I'm like, oh, I forgot we do this. Like, if you didn't bring it up, I would have just been like, end the show.
Right. Yeah, maybe it hasn't gotten over. So, okay, this will be the last appearance of the post-show awards.
I actually kind of like it, though. It's a nice wrap-up.
I guess. I mean, keep match of the night, but I'll maybe tinker with things for the next go around.
You know what we need, Kelly? And I don't know if I've said it before because my memory's a little hazy, but I think we need an award to celebrate the heels.
Right. I think you may have brought it up once or twice before.
I think I might have brought it up.
But I'm not sure. Well, best chin lock, maybe?
Chin lock. Oh, yes, best chin lock award. Wait, all right. Well, who was your best face in peril? Sean?
It was Sean.
Yeah, Sean. Okay. All right, and then the next one's the best hot tag, right?
Best House of Fire.
Best House of Fire, yeah. All right, hold on a second. Here we go. I guess it's Marty. Yeah, I guess it's Marty.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's obvious that the Rockers are now the top babyface team. Although the Hearts are pretty solid as a babyface
team. Hearts are pretty solid, but Anvil's going to have a hard time keeping up with Marty.
Yeah, there's that. No, the Rockers are just more dynamic.
And then we all know that Shawn Michaels is a better wrestler than Bret Hart, let's face it.
That's what some people think. But, you know, us wise Canadians.
I'm just trying to get some heat here. You know, maybe we can increase viewership or listenership by creating some heat.
Okay, we'll do an angle and... We'll go full on gimmick podcast going forward.
Yeah, gimmick
building,
podcast.
Building
mine,
to
mine
a cage
be
match.
Trolling people about how awesome Shawn Michaels is.
All right, so we're done. This was fun. A lot of cool matches.
Done.
And well, it's November the 15th today. American Thanksgiving.
That is right.
American Thanksgiving is right around the corner. And Marty thought it'd be a good idea, since we're timing it almost perfectly here, to watch the Survivor Series card coming up, 1988 Survivor Series, and have it drop before Thanksgiving. So that's the next show. And we are going to try for the second time to live watch this show. Well, not this show, but a Survivor Series show. We made an attempt on Survivor Series 87 earlier in the year. It was a dismal failure.
It was.
And I never released it officially anyways, although I mentioned, I think, at least once, that it is out there somewhere on the ProWrestlingOnly.com message board if one desires to find it. And hell, if this goes off okay, maybe I will release the 87, what we salvaged, or what I salvaged from the 87 attempt.
I don't know. The 87 one sucked.
I'll just, as a bonus, I'll throw it in.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, it's been long enough now, as a little bonus, if you guys
want. That's true. At this point, I just don't really remember what it was about.
Exactly.
So
I don't either, really, but... Yeah. Anyway, so yes, next time.
I just remember a women's Survivor Series match.
Yeah, no, we did. We didn't even get through the whole card. We didn't.
We know we had technical failures.
There was a lot of technical problems, and so I'm a little leery about doing it again, but we're gonna give it a shot. Maybe it'll become a running gag every time we try and do Survivor Series that it'll be a total failure. But who knows?
So if it's so successful, we can just keep on live watching through the 4-hour show. Can you believe they're doing another 4-hour show?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I can believe it. I just think it's stupid.
Anyway,
let's not get into that.
All right, well, I won't get it.
We'll end on a positive note.
Positive note. I'm going to NXT on Thursday.
Well, there's a positive note.
Cool. Did you know that Roderick Strong's in NXT?
I did. You didn't?
You don't watch.
Yeah, you don't watch the shows, which I don't understand at all.
Well, because, you know, I watch a lot of professional wrestling.
You watch Raw and SmackDown, right?
I watch Raw and SmackDown, and then on top of that, I'm watching like 1999 FMW.
Right. I think you could cut. Just here's a bit of advice: cut Raw out of your lineup, and there you go. That frees up 3 hours. And you have 1 hour for NXT and then 2 hours for something else.
The reason I keep Raw around, this is going to sound weird, but the reason I keep Raw around is my dad and my mother like Raw.
Oh, so you watch it all together as a family.
We watch it as a family together. They really enjoy Jericho.
Shame on me for trying to break up, you know, good family time. No, I feel bad now. Sorry.
No, it's okay. You didn't know.
All right. So next time, look for it. Hopefully it'll come off without a hitch. And we may have a surprise third man in the booth for this live watch for Survivor Series 88.
Which side is he on?
Good question. Who knows? So
is he going to drop the leg?
He's going to, you're right. Yeah. It will be the Wolf Pack or something.
Sweet. You know, that actually, the mystery third man really worked well into our life.
Yep. That's your segue right there. Yeah. Just too sweet. All right. Look for that before Thanksgiving, folks. Survivor Series 88. Good night.